Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness Pujya Swami Chidanand Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India.
How do we remain conscious? Practice. It really is practice. I wish I had a magic wand or a pill. It's just practice. But realize that it's your own mind. How many people here play some kind of musical instrument? Raise your hand if you play a musical instrument at all. Oh, there have to be more of you. Nobody here plays any musical instrument at all. Yes, you play people. Raise your hand. Let us see how many people play a musical instrument at all. Huh? You play, what do you play? Yeah, any of you. What instrument? Yes.
I'm not good at it.
That's okay. I didn't say who's an expert. Just who plays. Yes.
I started learning ukulele.
Fantastic. Ukulele. What else do you play? Anybody else? Anybody play the piano? Yes. You play?
Guitar.
Great. Anybody play tabla?
Drums.
Great. Anybody play a harmonium? You play a harmonium. Now, anybody play any sports?
Badminton.
Any other sports? Cricket?
Tennis.
Great. Okay. So, yes.
Cricket.
Great. So, did you learn to play overnight? Took practice, right? You practice, you dedicate time, you practice. Whether it's art, whether it's music, whether it's sports, whatever it may be. Very few people are born being able to do it. Every once in a while, yes, you get a Mozart. But it's very, very, very rare. 99.999 whatever it must be percent of people who play instruments, who make art, who play sports, you practice it. You teach your fingers how to do it. You teach your legs how to do it. You teach your hands how to do it. You teach your mind how to make your hands and legs and fingers do it. So in the same way, we make being conscious something that we are prepared to dedicate time and energy to. If we expect it to come overnight, it would be like saying, I want to be a world-class piano player, but I don't feel like practicing. Maybe tomorrow I'll wake up and be able to do it. You'll spend your whole life going to sleep thinking, maybe tomorrow. Whereas if you had actually just taken 20 minutes a day all those years, and had sat down to practice, by now you'd be able to play. So that's what our meditative practices are about. First, we practice with our eyes closed, seated. It's good because it shuts out the world. Our eyes are closed, we're in a dark room. Hopefully our phones are off, no one's interrupting us. We're not moving around. So a lot of our attention ends up being able to focus anyway. But then, after we practice it in meditation, The goal is to bring it into our life. And it really is just practice. Practice doing things meditatively. So when you eat, for example, keep your phone in another room. If you're sitting with people, be together. But maybe you don't talk. Not all the time. I know it's nice to have conversations over meals, but every once in a while. And especially if you're eating alone, don't use it as an opportunity to get on the phone or watch TV. Just eat consciously. And if you notice your mind is getting distracted, bring it back. Let it become a meditation. Drinking a glass of water, drink it meditatively. Walking. Can you walk meditatively? Can you actually be aware of the feeling of the foot as you walk? The breath is great, it's always with you. Can you breathe consciously? Just draw the awareness wherever you are. You're sitting in a meeting. You're sitting in a movie. Wherever you may be. Bring the awareness to your breath. Start practicing. First with just mindful awareness. Just bringing the awareness, the attention, directing it how you want it to be. That's the first step. And then after you get there, then, and again, begin this part also when you're quiet and your eyes are closed and you're in your dark room, then start to see if you can take it a step deeper. Can you be aware of the being who is aware? So I'm aware of myself drinking the water. I'm aware of the way it feels on my tongue and in my throat. I'm aware of the swallow reflex. Okay. Can I go a step deeper? Who's aware? How do I know I'm aware? Who's aware that I'm aware? Who's watching me be aware? And when you start to hit that's when real consciousness starts to blossom. But first you have to go through attention and awareness. Focus, mindfulness. And in that, when you then start to see who's aware, who's mindful, who is the one, who's noticing that? If I say, oh, I'm being mindful now, well, who's saying that? That takes you a step deeper. And starts to give you an experience of your actual consciousness. You know, he says, in order to develop consciousness, I have to sit down and practice meditation, but when I practice meditation, I'm getting distracted. Start anywhere. Meaning, right here, right now. Can you be fully here and not distracted? Every time the mind wanders, bring it back. When it wanders, bring it back. You're going to get up, you're going to walk out of here. Stay aware. The mind is going to start going, all the things you've got to do, where you're going, what's for dinner. Bring it back. Just keep bringing the mind back. Bring it back to your breath. If you have a mantra, bring it back to your mantra. If you don't, develop a mantra, or get a guru mantra. Bring the mind back as you walk out, when you go for dinner. Stay aware. When you're moving through the world, practice not getting distracted. When you sit down for your meditation, you're going to get distracted, you're going to bring it back. But slowly what you're going to find is that you develop the skill, the ability of holding your awareness. Maybe not for 2 hours, but maybe for 2 minutes. And then maybe you notice that you've lost it more quickly and you bring it back. And then you hold it for another 2 minutes. And then you're able to bring it back quicker. And then when you actually sit down to meditate, you've got those beautiful 2 minute blocks in which you're able to hold the awareness without getting distracted. And in that spacious awareness of the breath, of the mantra, allow yourself to drop back, drop another step back. Can you notice yourself being aware of the breath? Can you notice yourself chanting the mantra? And just sit with that. Don't try to describe it to yourself. Just sit with it.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
Well, if you look it up in the dictionary, if you look up human, it's going to give you all of the specific details. Our genus and species will get Homo sapiens sapiens, right? It'll give you all of the characteristics that separate us from some other species. But that's only the DNA of humans. That's only the part that says we are more similar to another human than we are to, say, an ape. That's all it means, is that similarity on a purely genetic level, physical level, we are more similar to each other than any of us is physically, genetically, to our nearest genetic relative, the ape. That's all it means. So it's my buddy bad nie. It's not necessarily something to feel very proud of, right? It's just a species, like there are so many other species on Earth. We are just one. But when we say, what's different about humans? What's special about humans? Why are humans seen as the pinnacle of evolution? Now, physically we know they're said to be that, because we can look back over the last, you know, tens and hundreds of millions of years, and we can look at an evolution. Ah, first we were this, then we became that, first we were single-celled, then we became multi-celled. In the water, then we came up onto land. We can follow that. Then we learn to stand on 2 feet. Okay. But why are we considered the pinnacle of evolution spiritually? And the reason for that is that it's said that a human being is the only species, on Earth that actually can be conscious of itself. That no other species is able to look at itself and say, for example, that is just a pattern of energy in my brain called anger. It is not me. Right? We're the only species that can do that. Other species get angry, they act in anger. They are threatened, they act in anger. They're hungry, they grab whatever's around. They're sexually aroused, they'll grab whatever's around. There's no decision-making process other than on the purely physical level. Is this the good food to eat? Is this the right one to mate with? Just on a purely survival basis level. But humans are able to actually make decisions that have nothing to do with survival. We're the only species that's actually able to say, there is a wave of this experience that we call anger arising in me, but I am not going to act on it. I'm just going to look at it. Just going to watch it. Humans are the only ones who can do that. And that's why we are said to be the pinnacle of spiritual evolution, because only when you can do that can you say, I'm going to meditate. I'm going to chant japa. I'm going to read scriptures. I'm going to go to satsang. I'm going to purify and fine-tune my mind such that I can actually experience the truth of who I am. That is something only humans can do. But when we talk about being human, if you say to somebody, Hare insanto bano, right? What does that mean, be a human? Well, though obviously you're a human. You're standing on 2 legs, giving birth to live young, right? What does it mean to be a human? When we tell someone, "Are admi bano, insan bano," what do we mean by that? Well, we mean use that power that you have of insight, of discrimination, of the power to choose. Act with compassion, act with love, act with courage, act with caring, act with loyalty. These are the sorts of things that we mean when we say, Eddie, be a human for God's sake. But now we're actually in this beautiful opportunity to really redefine not just humans, but humanity. A very, very beloved, dear friend of mine, Dr. Bruce Lipton, who's a very, very famous author and speaker and just amazing overall being, speaks a lot about how we went from being single-celled organisms to being multi-celled organisms. And that when we did that, it transformed what we could do. When an amoeba became a multi-celled organism, the energy, the ability, the power was amazing. When we realized that as humans, we are actually called upon to to be part of humanity. Like a single-celled organism becomes a multi-celled organism. When we realize that that which we can do, be, accomplish as just a human compared to what we can do, be, accomplish when we are connected as humanity, this greater organism called humanity, that's where we're moving spiritually, evolutionary, that we've come into being humans. Now we need to move into humanity, that collectiveness, that it's not just me as my individual human, what I want, what I can do, what I can accomplish, what I can achieve, what I can have. But actually, how can I actually recognize that I'm part of something much greater, something much more powerful? Humanity. And until and unless we realize that, we're going to be stuck. Like an amoeba is stuck. And only when we really realize that humanity are we going to be able to actually actualize the full power of being human. That the full power of being human is not in an individual, but in a collective. And that's what we're here for. So I think that's what it means to be a human, but also what it means to be collective humans as humanity.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Like Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
Now, when you say these situations that draw you in, but that you need them in order to proceed, do you mean situations then in terms of like your career? Is that those are the types of situations you're talking? So spirituality has never said, thou shalt not engage in the world. Thou shalt not do your duty, do it well. In fact, the Bhagavad Gita is the perfect scripture on this. Gita Jayanti is coming up in a couple of days. We'll celebrate the Bhagavad Gita. It's the core scripture on your spirituality is supposed to happen while you are engaged, not in running away from it, but in being engaged. And the key, as you say, they draw you in, is for you to be very clear about which part of you gets drawn in. So Our actions have to. Our hands, our arms, our legs. Even parts of our brain, we have to put our mind on something. But that truth of who we are doesn't have to get drawn in. My favorite way of thinking about this is you think about actors and actresses, okay? Who their job is to play a role. Now, in order to play their role well, they have to be fully into it, right? I mean, really fully into it. And there's all kinds of techniques that they use to really, really get into it. And yet, even in the midst of the best scene they've ever done, the best acting, they always remember who they are. And if you doubt that, think about being on Broadway or in some very big theater. And the star of the show, in the midst of the most powerful scene. But suddenly in the front row, their husband, wife, mother, father, child, who had come to see the play, shouts to them and then collapses on the floor. Help, mom, or whatever, and then collapses. You think she's going to finish the scene? Of course not, right? She's going to jump off the stage. Doesn't matter, thousands of people. Could be at the most fancy theater in the world. She is going to jump off the stage to see what has happened. So even in the midst of playing that role perfectly, beautifully, fully, on the deepest level, she knows, I'm not actually this role, I'm actually this one's mom. And she's so aware of it that she doesn't miss a beat. The minute that that yell came, she's there. It's not like it took her a few minutes to be like, oh, wait, wait, let me remember who I am here. And you never, ever, ever hear the story of some actor who plays a villain in a movie or a TV show or a theater program going home and killing his family because he forgot it was only a role. Never happens. And to me, I love that example because it feels like this is how we are supposed to do life. You get pulled in, we play our roles. Again, Lord Krishna makes it so clear, stand up, play your role, play it fully, sincerely. Do your absolute best. But don't forget who you are. Don't let that mask get literally stuck to your face so that you think that that is your face. Don't be the very first actor who goes home and kills his family because he's playing a villain in the movie. Remember who you are. So as you get pulled in to your job, to that drama, it's wonderful. Play the role fully. But just remember it's a drama. And you're doing it and you're playing it. I'm a very visual person, and for me, there's a very powerful ritual that I'll share with you, and I recommend it. It's a ritual whereby in the morning, when you get up, if you have a meditation practice, do this right at the end of your meditation practice. If you don't have a meditation practice, I won't take too much of your time, but add 5 minutes, 3 minutes. Add a practice in which you take a moment and you simply connect just for a moment. And if you refuse to sit for meditation, do it in the shower. Connect for a moment with who you really are, that core inside of you, that depth inside of you. And then visualize yourself putting on. I like to think of a wetsuit. And I like to think of a wetsuit. You could think of it as just a costume, but I like to think of it as a wetsuit because a wetsuit is a really amazing invention. It doesn't actually keep the body dry, right? It's what people wear when they go swimming in the ocean or scuba diving. Doesn't keep the body dry. What it does is, when you put it on and you first go in, it allows this much water in, just this much, that your body temperature, your body heat, your shakti, heats that water. Because our bodies are warm. Your body heat heats that very, very, very thin layer of water. So then when you go into the depth of the ocean that's cold, your inner experience inside that wetsuit is of warm water. Right? It's not about warming the ocean. You've just got to warm that little bit of water such that your experience, even in the midst of a freezing ocean, is of warm water. And so I like to think of it as zipping up a wetsuit and then allowing that truth of who you are to just kind of permeate into the suit. That love, that joy, that peace, that awareness. And then you go into the world. You move through the world and you do your thing and you do it well. But as you've been moving through the world, you've been moving through it in your wetsuit so that your personal experience, even in the midst of negativity, in the midst of competition, in the midst of drama, in the midst of all of that, your experience is the experience of truth and of love, that spiritual warmth. And then at the end of the day, you can either do it right when you get home from work, depending on what your family situation is like, or you can do it at night right before you go to sleep. Either way. But literally visualize yourself taking it off in a shower, in meditation. Take it off. And then spend another moment reconnecting with the truth of who you are. And let that be, it's literally, I've just added a total of 5 minutes to your day. You know, call it 2.5, 3 minutes in the morning and the same in the evening. And of course, you can expand it, which is even more beautiful. Add a beautiful meditation before. Add a beautiful meditation afterwards in the evening. But nobody should say, I don't have time. Bare minimum, 5 minutes, that's it. Okay? And even as I said, you can do it in the shower if you have to. So no excuses. And I think you'll find that it'll really change how you feel when you're moving through the world.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul. Every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Alec Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation.
Really important points. First of all, on the level in terms of talking to me, anything and everything that I have and am is from him. Is that beautiful energy? And sure. Now, in terms of freezing up, it's a very interesting situation because Pooja Swamiji, the guru of many of us here, has that extraordinary power. And yeah, it's an extraordinary energy. And he can see everything. And I remember when I first came, being in that presence. And I never froze up, but I remember it was so extraordinary because to be in the presence of someone who actually can see everything, who knows everything, and who loves you anyway, is perhaps the most transformative opportunity that any of us get. Because so many of us move through the world kind of doing our best to be on our best behavior. Obviously, we want people to like us. We know there's parts within us that we don't really like, that aren't really something to be proud of, that we feel dark inside. And then, yeah, just one moment, I'll come right back to you. And then we get in the presence of someone who actually sees it, from whom you can't hide it. And I won't go into all the stories, but I've got very personal scientific proof. He sees, he knows. Not even when you're in front of him, but across the world. And the initial feeling, for me at least, the initial feeling was this, like, oh my God, the secret's out. The secret's out, and this divine, amazing being now knows how horrible and dark and wrong and all these things that I am. And yet there he is looking at you. Right? Yeah, see, I understood your emergency. With such grace. And you don't really know what to do about that. Because we've built identities around that. Identities of, this is what's wrong with me. These are my problems. This is my darkness. This is what I have to hide. Because if they know, then nobody will like me. They will leave me. Even in our closest relationships, our families, marriages, relationships, there's always something, some aspects that most of us keep inside because we feel if they know, if they see this, they'll leave me. And then you're in the presence of someone who sees it all and is looking at you with such pure love. And yeah, it takes a moment. And for me, it became the most extraordinary gift, because my faith in him was so strong and so complete from the beginning that I had this momentary crisis of trying to hold two realities simultaneously. One, I'm horrible, I'm dark, I'm wrong, I'm bad. Two, he loves me and says I'm wonderful and divine. And that conflict, it didn't work. And the only way to resolve that conflict was in faith, to say, well, I've got so much faith in him, and he sees. Maybe this part isn't right. Maybe all of that which I thought about myself actually is wrong. Because there's no way he's wrong. So maybe this other part is wrong. And that for me was where my real powerful healing began. Was okay. And if I weren't dark and wrong and bad, what would I be? And of course, I had no idea. But that's where grace comes in. And being able to just sit in that presence of, okay, I no longer have any idea who I am. But I trust you so fully that I no longer can hold on to this false identity. And I'm just going to sit here and allow experience to show me who I am. And it's been extraordinary. And I remember telling my friends back home, he knows everything, he can see everything. And they were like, God, isn't that scary? With regard to the guru seeing everything, though, when I told my friends, you know, he can see everything, they said, well, isn't that scary? Like, oh my God, somebody can see everything. And I told everybody, you know, it's actually the most comforting feeling in the world. Because there's always this anxiety of, are they going to find out? Are they going to find out? Are they going to find out? And now you're in a situation where he knows. You can't shove truth down anybody's throat. For those joining us online who didn't hear what he was saying, you know, when you tell people and you try to share the experience and they don't understand and they don't listen and they think you're crazy, you just become quiet. And what I learned was you can't shove truth down people's throat. Doesn't work. That absolutely is when they think you've been brainwashed, you're crazy, you've joined a cult, whatever it may be. Especially when those people are in America. In India, there's still a lot more of a culture that understands the guru, the ashram. But in America, you try to tell this, and yeah, that is what they think. But what I've learned is the truth itself is a magnet. And while you definitely don't want to try to shove it down people's throats, and this, by the way, is the same teaching for people who come and say, I'm on a spiritual path, but my husband isn't, or my wife isn't. And how do I bring them on? They're still, you know, wanting to drink and party and this and that, and they're not interested in spirituality. And how do I convince them? And it's the same teaching, which is, you cannot shove it down someone's throat. You cannot convince them as though it were a debate. All you can do is live that truth as a magnet. And what happens is slowly, slowly, it actually draws people towards you. When you're really living truth, it draws people. people are drawn by. They're drawn by peace. They're drawn by joy. They're drawn by truth. And so if you can just live that, really live it, people will come, not all of them. Inevitably, all of us on spiritual paths have lost some relationships. But, you know, when you grow physically, when you're young and you're growing, inevitably there are many times where your favorite pants no longer fit, or your favorite shoes no longer fit, and you have to kind of accept that they were great, but they no longer fit. And now that your feet are bigger, your legs are bigger, they no longer fit. And the same thing happens sometimes with relationships, where we may not be growing physically, but we're expanding spiritually. And there are occasionally some relationships that just no longer fit. But those relationships that were real, that were deep, that were rooted really in love, not in drinking buddies or partying buddies or avoid the world buddies, but real relationships, this is what I've seen, is they all come. It doesn't mean they become disciples. It doesn't mean that they also start following. But it means that they're drawn by the truth. And you're able to have very, very deep connections in love, in truth. And then slowly, slowly, they actually start saying, hey, you know, I'm going through this time in my life. What do you think about it? Or, you know, I'm suffering from this or struggling with that. Do you have any thoughts? So it's not be quiet as in just shut up and don't talk about it. The idea of talking about these experiences, it's instinct. We want to share. The dilemma is that these experiences defy words. They are experiences beyond the mind. If they're experiences of the mind, they're not deep spiritual experiences. That's why spiritually we work to quiet the mind, to find space in the mind, I don't like to think of control the mind as though it were, you know, a circus animal, but to no longer be at the mercy of the mind, to recognize that it's an organ, a muscle. I mean, not biologically, but in terms of how we think about it, that it's something for us to use, but not something to be enslaved by. The spiritual experiences are of the heart, of the spirit, of the soul, of the energetic being. And when we try to explain them, what ends up happening is that we then get pulled out of heart, spirit, into the thinking mind. What are the right words? And inevitably, the words are never the right words. We do the best we can, we try, but I mean, imagine explaining what it feels like to be in the sun to someone who has never experienced the sun, never been outside. How do you explain that? I mean, you can use words like warm, but warm could be a sweater. Sun is so much more than warm. You can say bright. Well, but bright could be this, you know, spotlight in your face. The sun is so much more. So semantics are always a challenge. And this is why spiritually it's suggested, not just as a discipline, but actually as a way of allowing that energy to to really percolate in and work within you. Because when you try to turn that energy into words, you actually end up dissipating it. One of my very favorite stories is of Paramahansa Sri Ramakrishna, who was trying to explain to his disciples one day about, I think it was about the chakras, and he was talking about the powerful energy of the opening of the chakras, and he would begin down at the root chakra, and he would take them kind of one by one, and every time he got right up to the heart chakra, I think it was, he would just enter this trance. The disciples would sit around for hours waiting for him to come out of the trance, and he would finally come out. He'd start over, get there, and again, he's in a trance. And finally, after many unsuccessful attempts to take his disciples through all of the different energy centers, he says to them in this mixture of laughing and tears pouring down his face, he says, "I'm really trying to tell you, but the mother just won't let me." And I love that. That there's just something that actually stops us from being able to really semantically explain this. And so it's discipline, but it's also an honoring of the power of the experience to realize it defies words. But the beautiful thing is that words are not our only way of sharing, right? I mean, we've all been in situations where someone says, you know, someone's done something to us and like, sorry. No, you know they're not sorry, right? They said the words, sorry, I'm sorry. You know they're not. And then we've been in situations with someone, you know they really are sorry. But for whatever reason, they're just not saying it. Maybe they feel shy to say it, but you feel it. You just know this person really feels badly. People who love us, but who just are not so good at saying, I love you. And then people who all the time say, love you, love you, love you. And you're like, yeah, maybe not. And you just, you know. It's not that they're purposely lying. It's just that the words are not really in alignment with the energetic experience you're getting from them. So we've got our energetic way of communicating that's actually even more powerful than the words. So if you've had experiences and you want to share them with loved ones, bring that energy into the connection. Just be that. Sit with them, hold their hand, look in their eyes. Be present. They'll feel it. They'll know it. And then you don't dissipate the energy by words, and you don't end up with people who feel like they're getting, you know, that you're trying to convince them of something.
This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.